is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. There's just a few days left in the 2024 regular legislative session. But this is when things heat up and bills go back and forth between the chambers.
Now things are bouncing back and forth from the House to the Senate, trying to see if amendments are going to be taken care of and so on and so forth. But there's still a lot of lightning rod bills going on.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Governor Jim Justice said he's open to a special legislative session later this year to address the state budget. Chris Schultz has more.
Last week, legislators were notified of a potential $465 million federal clawback of COVID-19-era funding regarding the state's spending on education. Legislators like House Finance Committee Chairman Vernon Criss, a Republican from Wood County, said the late notice has required adjustments and delays to the state's proposed budget. At his regular briefing Wednesday, Justice was open to the idea of a May session to address further funding, but was confident that lawmakers could pass a base budget before the close of session Saturday.
But as far as our one-time spending and so on like that, if we want to come back in May and try to hash that out, I guess that'll be fine.
Justice also said he believes no federal clawback will happen. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
A House bill that aims to change vaccine requirements for virtual public, private, and parochial students in West Virginia moved through the Senate Health Committee Wednesday afternoon after a lengthy discussion. Emily Rice has the story.
In front of a room full of white coat donned physicians, senators discussed House Bill 5105, a bill to eliminate vaccine requirements for public virtual schools. Dr. Lisa Costello, a pediatric hospitalist at WVU Medicine Children's Hospital in Morgantown, asked the committee to vote against the bill.
With immunizations, the decision that one person makes really impacts all of the other people around us. We know that there are people who cannot have immunizations. And that's why our policy, as currently is law in West Virginia, is the gold standard across the country.
The committee passed the bill after amending it to remove religious exemptions for public school students, but not for private and parochial school students. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about air emissions coming from fracking sites and people getting sick.
As energy company EQT expands in Appalachia, a new investigation looks at problems some West Virginia families faced living near its gas drilling operations. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple. In the summer of 2021, Pittsburgh-based EQT fracked 8 wells in a West Virginia hollow where it already had operations, including a nearby compressor station. Not long after, 4 families in Knob Fork noticed smells and felt sick. Quinn Glabicki investigated their situation in a feature for Public Source called Hollowed Out. He says they attribute their symptoms to air emissions like volatile organic compounds from EQT's operation.
The really remarkable thing about this story, when I first heard about it, was not the fact that people were getting sick or that their proximity to this infrastructure was causing problems, but it was the fact that you had 4 families essentially experiencing the same symptoms at the same time. You had families with individual air monitors that were all kind of recording the same data, and you had 4 families that were complaining to the state at the same time, and federal regulators as well. So, you know, some of the things that they experienced were breathlessness, coughing, some of the more acute symptoms of rashes, tremors. It was kind of a gamut that began late 2020 and extended the worst of it through when they decided to leave. And those conditions are ongoing.
One of the family members kept a diary of all of their symptoms. And the families complained to the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and the federal EPA. What kind of response did they get from the agencies?
Over time, you know, the DEP would receive these complaints. Some of them are quite dramatic. Families, you know, quite literally begging for help, telling them that they are deathly ill. But by and large, you know, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection found no violations. They did go out and inspect. They said that they've been actively involved in an investigation. But, you know, through documents that we received via Freedom of Information Act, we know that the agency was turning around once they received these complaints, contacting EQT and basically asking if anything was wrong, and then relaying that information back to the families, essentially trusting the company to assess its own emissions. I should note that, you know, part of our reporting discovered that there is an ongoing EPA investigation into the situation in Knob Fork. That's, you know, federal regulators who have come in to kind of usurp what was previously the responsibility of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection.
Are these neighbors' complaints any different than those near other fracking sites in West Virginia or Pennsylvania?
Certainly, these families exist at a unique intersection of distinct processes when you talk about gas extraction. But I do think that, you know, this is a situation that really illustrates, you know, what can happen when, you know, extensive fracking operations are placed in a place with meteorological and topographical conditions that make it difficult for those emissions to escape. Part of why we were so intrigued by this story was because there were so many documents to review, so much personal documentation that really chronicled this out over time and really chronicled out the overlapping health symptoms, the same experience for, you know, over 12 family members.
That's Quinn Glebicki of Public Source. He says EQT did not respond to questions for the story called Hollowed Out, which you can read at our website, AlleghenyFront.org. It's part of a Public Source series, EQT's Gas Play. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Patchy fog and light rain this morning. Variable cloudiness today. Highs in the 50s. Cloudy skies tonight with lows in the 40s. Mostly cloudy on Friday with a chance of rain in the afternoon, highs in the 50s and 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by Ziegler & Ziegler, attorneys in Hinton, marking 50 years of providing legal services for the people, businesses, nonprofits, and public agencies of West Virginia. When the session began back in January, our government reporter Randy Yowie was assigned to cover the House of Delegates, and Southern West Virginia reporter Brianna Heaney the Senate. With a budget bill still to be finalized, Randy and Brianna offered some of their insights into bill proposals, passed and failed, that affect the lives, wallets, and communities of West Virginia.
We're coming together, just like the House and Senate are coming together, to talk about, work through some of these bills.
And we still have a couple of intense days to go, but there's, you know, been a lot. Now things are bouncing back and forth from the House to the Senate, trying to see if amendments are going to be taken care of and so on and so forth. But there's still a lot of lightning rod bills going on.
There is. And with that, there's even some tension between the two bodies. I mean, a couple of days ago, a simple House bill that would put changing rooms in men's bathrooms and rest areas in the state was shot down. And really the pure reason was retaliating against the House for not bringing certain bills out of the Senate's judiciary onto the floor.
Holding bills hostage. I learned about that last year. And when somebody comes out and says, you're sending us a poopy diaper bill and we're sending you tremendous bills back and forth, I mean, that gets away from what they're supposed to be doing, is deciding legislation that helps and has something to do with West Virginians.
It does. I guess their counter argument is that You know, it's a game of politics, and to get some of the important things that they feel like done, they may have to hold on that poopy diaper bill.
Well, when you have a supermajority and a vocal minority, you're going to get a conflict. But let's get to a couple of the bills. I think we're going to start with Women's Bill of Rights, because it's back on the agenda, and this is one that's bounced back and forth, no doubt about it. We're trying to define in code the definitions of man and woman, and then this kind of boils down to who can or cannot go into a women's bathroom or a girl's bathroom or a women's locker room in schools.
Yeah, the House and the Senate have both had their version of these bills. The Senate bill, there was even the smallest change. There was a lot of conflict around. I mean, in Judiciary, Senator Trump amended the bill to be more, to be worded in a way and to have wording that basically just says refer to federal law, because that is, you know, the Supremacy Clause and everything like that. Where you did have more far-right leaning Republicans say they didn't even want that in there because they didn't want really any reference to federal law in that bill. And then, of course, you had the House bill side, where there was a slew of amendments thrown at that.
I mean, but Delegate Kayla Young wrote a whole new bill, an extensive bill that she said really put forward what women's bills of rights were, making sure that personal hygiene products got to female inmates, just down the line with a number of things that was rejected along party lines. The problem is there's still not a lot of definition. We hear from Democrats, this bill is incomplete. One thing that this bill and a lot of other bills don't do is have final definitions on what's going to happen in this case. If it's a girls' basketball team and it's halftime, can the male coach go in and talk to his team at halftime into that locker room? I mean, are they not when they're taking a shower, of course, but some of the logic goes out the door.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the things they do define in those bills. They set definitions on male and female based on a person's sex instead of their gender, which is a bit of a change in state law. And the sex is reliant on the ability to basically produce either sperm or ova or female eggs. So it seems to me that a lot of what they're doing too is setting the framework for future bills that would have policy or even criminal code.
We see that in a number of cases as well. One rudimentary bill right now talks about unemployment. I mean, they argued that 3.5 hours the other day in a committee, and especially what it does is lower some of the unemployment monies that people are going to get for a certain amount of weeks, but it's done over time. Mostly it's going to help out the employers, and it's going to equal out to make sure that the fund is still going to be solvent down the road. Opponents of the bill say, I mean, come on, with Cleveland Cliffs and the Allegheny Woods, we just saw, 1,500 jobs or so leave there, and now is not the time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That bill is a Senate bill, and it was kind of introduced right before crossover day. There's a lot of different ways that opponents talk about the bill. Another major way that I didn't hear you say is a lot of people are saying the fund is healthy, and it's the fund could sustain a extreme level crisis, like a pandemic level 2020 crisis, for 2 years, which didn't happen during the pandemic. I mean, a lot of economists are having trouble finding a time in West Virginian history where that level, 2 years at 10%, has ever even happened. So a lot of opponents that are saying, we need to do this because in case something bad happened, well, this would truly be something completely unprecedented would have to happen for the fund to be in trouble.
That was Brianna Heaney and Randy Yowie discussing the legislative session for the legislature today. To hear the rest of their discussion, visit our website. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.